worldwide. Every weight class. It's Lewis Heaton. Whiskey Bynum. It's the Boxer Rush Hour Show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. You know what you came for? Yes, indeed. This where you come to get your info. Listen up. Other shows throwing the towel.
It's the Boxer Rush Hour Show. Let's go. In the ring, we throw hands, octagon elbows. Analytical, critical commentary is necessary. A bevy of opinions, we heavy on the winning. This podcast is due, break down the pay-per-view. For boxing purists, yo, let this man through. We rise right, surprise sight at the prize fight. Hands taped up and gloves tied tight. Ring the bell, want some, get some. Let the chick pull where they may work the George Crumb.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. I am your host, Abraham Gonzalez. As always, intro by Lewis Heaton, and the podcast is powered by Sofrito Rico. It's where the champions eat. Visit sofritorico.com. Okay, today's show is going to be a good one. So hopefully you've enjoyed the list of guests that have come onto the podcast so far. And one of the requests that I've seen on Twitter and social media is that they wanted an interview with a boxing coach. And so in looking around, I intend to bring on some more coaches from various lengths of experience. But today, we're going to bring on Joel Diaz. He is, widely known throughout the boxing world, you know, as one of the better coaches out there. Some say one of the best out there currently. He's a Southern California guy. And most notably, for those that, you know, are listening that may be casual boxing fans, he was the longtime trainer of Timothy Bradley. So without further ado, here is my interview with Joel Diaz. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. Today's guest is a special guest. He is a trainer extraordinaire, and he works out of that Southern California region. And his name is Joel Diaz. Joel, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me here. Just a little busy, but I'm always here, man.
Hey, thank you for taking the time to do this. Real quick, before we get into it, can you give us a quick bio blast from your early beginnings as a fighter before going in being a coach?
Well, I started boxing at a really early age. I was 11 when I started boxing as an amateur. And growing up in the amateurs, I did okay, I guess, you know. I got to a point where I was part of the Olympic team, the U.S. team. And at that time, it was Oscar De La Hoya and myself, you know, coming up on the same, representing the same region, Southern California. And, you know, when it was time to go to the Olympics, you know, I was left behind because I wasn't a U.S. citizen. So I decided to turn pro, and as a professional fighter, I had 28 fights, 28 plus three, retired due to an eye injury, retina detachment on my right eye. So then from there, I just became a trainer and started training my brothers, Antonio and Julio Diaz. And from there, Tim Bradley came around. And before Antonio and Julio, I started training other fighters, brought them up, and then they started leaving. They retired. And then when Tim Bradley came around, that's when I started establishing a foundation with him. And we went along for quite a bit of years.
Yes. Now, speaking of Tim Bradley, looking back, because you guys had a storied career together, right, and had so many achievements. Looking back, would you have done anything differently? Thinking about it now, as far as how things went between you and Tim.
No, I don't think I would have done anything different. Everything we did was great, you know. I mean, 5 world titles. I think it was good. It was a successful career together. I mean, I don't know if I would have done something different. Things wouldn't have happened the way it happened, you know? I think things happened the way they did because they're meant to be. And whatever happened happened, and you know, we did good, and we came along, always coming in as an underdog and coming out with a victory, you know. So for us, it was good that every time they threw us out there, it was for us to lose. I mean, they always threw us against top opponents, bigger names, and we were always the B side, and we always came out with a victory. So it was good, especially when everybody thinks you're going to lose and you come out with a win. So I'm happy with what happened and the way it happened.
Now, why do you think that? Why do you think that all those years, you know, you guys were the underdogs each time going into the fights?
Why? It's because it's common sense. Boxing is a business. Tim Bradley wasn't a fan-friendly fighter. You know, he wasn't the type of fighter that everybody wanted to see. Obviously, we all know. Philip Bouchet aside, Tim Bradley wasn't an attractive fighter that people wanted to turn the TV on and watch, you know? And in boxing, you have to be the attractive fighter, you know? So it was hard to deal with Bradley's career, you know, his management team, his promotional team. It was always hard. So basically, Tim Bradley was always put on the spot because he earned the spot. It wasn't that, you know, they gave it to him and he had to fight those guys, you know? If Tim Bradley would have been back then, like a Ryan Garcia or somebody that sold tickets, maybe things would have been different, you know? Because with his discipline, with his willpower that he had, and being an attractive fighter, being a, you know, a fan-friendly fighter like all these youngsters that are coming up right now, Tim Bradley would have probably done twice as much in his career. Instead of winning five, he probably won 110, you know? And that's just the way it is. It's because the business of the sport guides you the right way. And with Bradley, there was no way to guide him, you know. Unfortunately, it's understandable. When he was with Thompson Promotions coming up early in his career, he only fought at the Doubletree in Ontario, you know. That's the only way that he will be a main event, you know. When he was in the bigger stage with Gary Shaw, you know, they never did an event where Tim Bradley was the head of the card, you know. And it was always somebody else, Don King, when Devin Alexander, you know, Golden Boy with everybody else that were out there, you know. So there was never like a card that Tim Bradley was like the main head attraction, or his promoter never did an event where he was going to be the headliner. Why? Because it's understandable, it's business. And, you know, Tim Bradley was never a ticket seller. And when you're a ticket seller, obviously they're gonna have you on a silver platter, and you're gonna be there. And Tim Bradley earned his spot the hard way.
Got it. All right. Now, you worked out of the Boys and Girls Club in Indio, all right, for a while. I read somewhere that you had a gym that you were putting together last year. Did you finish that gym, and is that where you're working out of now?
Yeah, I worked for the Boys and Girls Club for 15 years. I started training out of Coachella Boxing Club where I started training my brothers back then. That was like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then I think it was 2004, 2005, around there, or earlier than that. I started working for the Boys and Girls Club. My brother Antonio, when Antonio retired, he was at the Boys and Girls Club. He was working for the Boys and Girls Club, and there was a boxing program that he was running. So I came over and started helping him, and then, you know, build a good relationship with the people there. And I started, you know, bringing professional fighters in there, you know, even though that was only for kids. And they opened the doors to us. We started training professional fighters as well. And that's where we established our foundation with Tim Bradley and a lot of other fighters. And, you know, the year before, when the pandemic hit and it affected everybody, it affected the world, they closed us down due to the pandemic. So it was understandable. It was when the pandemic, the COVID was in its prime, they shut us down. We couldn't train there. So I had to go and find a place to train some of my fighters that I had, even though there was not much boxing at the time. But many years ago, which is good, it was I don't know if it was 8 or 9 years ago. There was a building for sale here in town. It's a big building, actually. It was a big, big building that was for sale right on the main boulevard in Indio. And it was pretty destroyed. Actually, at the time, it was a furniture store. The guy that was in there was selling furniture, but he had no electricity, nothing. I mean, no electricity in the building. I mean, it was just like basically four walls and nothing in it. And I decided to look into the building, and it was for sale. It was in the market for a while. So I called the owner and said, hey, you know what? I'm interested in your building. And the lady said, sure, you know. And I said, you know what? I have an offer for you. So I made an offer, which was ridiculous. You know, I made I went like low. And the lady basically told me to, you know, to die, you know, to disappear from the world, you know. I said, okay, no problem. You know, I tried. Months went by, and then, you know, my friend who was at the time telling me, hey, you know, that building is still for sale. Really? He goes, try calling her again. And I said, nah. She was pretty mad last time I made her that offer. And you know what? I give it a try. I picked up the phone. I called the lady. I said, you know what? I called you a while back, and you know, I'm still interested in your building. And she says, you have a better offer? I said, no, the same one. So, yeah. So the lady basically, she was, I don't know, maybe she was struggling, or she was in need, or she was going through some problem. But she says, you know what? If you're a serious buyer and you're not bullshitting, and you know, make a deposit right now, give me my bank account, make a deposit of so much, boom, and we have a deal. So great. So I went ahead and I had the building there for years. let's put it this way. I was in a comfort zone. I was in a comfort zone at the Boys and Girls Club, because I would go in there and everything was provided. Equipment, the building, no overhead whatsoever. So I would just go in there when I wanted, leave when I wanted, and it was great. You know, I can't deny that it was good. But at the same time, you know, things change in life. And when this COVID situation hit and they told us to leave, you know, like, wow, you know, I should have done something in the other building, which was for many years. I rented that building to the guy that had the furniture store. But then this guy started doing some crazy stuff at the building, where the city started calling, bringing it up to my attention that there was something illegal going on in there. So I had to get rid of him. I told him, you know what, you can't be here. So when he left, I basically closed the building. I closed the building and I left it closed because I didn't have time. I didn't have time to do anything. I was busy at the time. For years. So all of a sudden, transients started breaking in the building, and they burned it down one time. And when they burned it, I had insurance, I fixed it. And then not far from that time, not long from then, they burned it again. Two times it was burned. So, you know, me having problems with insurance, left it as it was. It was just four walls and a burned roof. But you're talking about 6,250 square feet.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, when it was June 2020, one day I woke up in the morning. I mean, I reached out to one of my fighters, Cub Swanson, who was a UFC fighter, who had his own private gym here in town, small gym, very small. And he only had mats because he does UFC. And he only had mats and 10 punching bags. That's all he had. So I was looking for a place to train my fighters. And I reached out to him. I said, hey, Cub, you know what? I'm looking for a place to train my boys, man. He says, coach, don't worry about it. You know, bring your whatever you want to bring in that gym, put it up and make use of it. At that time, it was like, you're dependent. I mean, I know that if they come out here, they try to close the gym. I'm renting it to you. You know, you got professional fighters that live off of that. So I was there with Cub Swanson for months, And I started noticing, man, I need a gym on my own. That's when I started working out there on the gym by myself. I went out there because there was people living in my building. There was transients living in my building. I mean, I removed five trucks, five trailers full of trash. I mean, they were hoarders, man. I mean, it was bad. You're talking about a burned building with four walls, a burned roof, but inside, I mean, they had, you name it, bikes, lawnmowers, couches. I mean, you name it. I cleaned everything out. It took me exactly 1 year. It took me 1 year to basically move into that gym right now. Right now, honestly, I'm really happy that I worked one whole year, day and night. I mean, physically, I was out there physically working myself, you know, with a shovel, removing, demolishing, I mean, trash, you name it. You know, people came around, they helped me out. There was no fights. There was no money coming in. And I was still pushing, man. I was still pushing. But thank God right now, I got my own gym. It's my building. And I'm really happy that, you know, that whole year of hard work, day and night, paid off. And right now I got, man, I'm blessed. I got classes at 6 a.m. from 6 to 7. I train my pros from 10 to 3 o'clock. I have beginner classes at 5, from 5 to 6. My advanced amateurs from 6 to 7:30. And then I got classes from 8 to 9. You know, my gym is open all day long, you know, and my brother Antonio helps me. He has his own clients. He does one-on-ones. He's no longer working for the Boys and Girls Club. He's now over here. I have another coach named Steve, which is Cub Swanson's brother. He does one-on-ones. He has his own classes. We have an area where we have mats for MMA. We have kickboxing. We have boxing. We have two rings. Actually, right now, they're working on a shower. I'm going to have a sauna. I mean, it's huge. You're talking about 6,250 square feet. It's a big building. But I transformed the building in and out where people come around and they can't believe. The transformation of that building, especially people that live around. The most important thing is that people would always tell me, people would always put me down, like, don't do it. That building is in a bad area. Don't do it. It's not going to work. Because that building is right off of India Boulevard. And that area right there has always been, you know, a lot of prostitution, drugs. And there's hotels around it, motels and stuff. And I get so much compliments, man. I get so much compliments daily. Owners, business owners that come around, they come to the gym and they're my neighbors. And they come around and they're like, hey, Mr. Diaz, we want to thank you. It's been, I mean, before you moved in here, before you started working in this project, we used to call the police on transients and, you know, drug addicts. At least twice a week. It's been a year. We haven't even called the cops once.
Wow.
Basically, I can tell you this. When I removed those transients from my building, I cleaned that area. You see once in a while, but they no longer isolate behind buildings. They don't isolate. They don't vandalize my building. I mean, we have little incidents, but not like it was before. You know, and that area right now, they already know there's a gym. There's traffic every day. They see cars every day. So there's activity. Once they see activity, they don't come around. So I'm really happy that all that negativity that a lot of people gave me when I started, it transformed into positive, you know, because right now I got a lot of kids. I honestly, if you're familiar with this area, I'm in India.
Yeah.
I get people from Yucca Valley, kids that come from Yucca Valley to train with me every day. I got people from Riverside, Paris, Rancho Cucamonga, Colton. They drive just to come and train here in the gym. And it's good because, I mean, I like it because this is my life. Training fighters is my life. Training kids is my life. And when I see a kid improve, I know it's my job, it's my time. And I love it, I enjoy it. And now it's a big relief. I feel like that that whole 1 year that I worked, 2020, June 2020 to July 1st, 2021, man. It was day and night, man. Day and night. I will wake up early morning, 5 a.m. I'm out there working. Early morning, just working, physically working my ass. And then going to train some of the boys between 10 and 1 or 2, and then head back to the building and keep working until 12 midnight, coming home every day. Right now, I feel relieved. I feel happy. I feel that I accomplished something. You know, I remember back 1996 when I fought for the world title. You know, it felt like I was getting ready for a world title, and I won. And I feel like, you know, that building there, that facility right there, when I see all the energy and all the kids coming in every day and everybody enjoys the workout, everybody running around, you know, that gym is so big. The warm-up is running. I mean, I have a path that kids run around. They run around the whole gym. Even the adults. I mean, where do you have a gym that is so big that you can run inside? You know, when you have, I have like close to 50 punching bags, you know, close to 50 punching bags, but that's including the kickboxing bags, you know. Mm. I have treadmills, some weights. I have a little bit of, I have a conditioning area. I have a strength and conditioning area. I have the MMA area, two rings, kickboxing, and boxing. And I have two big dressing rooms, two restrooms, the office, some storage. It's a big building, man. I mean, hopefully one day you stop by and check it out yourself.
Yeah, for sure, man. I've gone by Indio many of days, man, but I'm back on the East Coast, but I'm definitely going to make my way over there soon. Hey, so my next question is a perfect segue. Most people want to know, like, how does a fighter audition for you when there's a pro fighter that is looking for a coach and they reach out to you and say, you know, I would like, you know, for you to take a look at me to see if this can work. What are some of the things that you're looking for?
When a fighter comes to me, especially when they're on their own, it's been a while. The fighters don't come to me just on their own and say, hey, I want to turn pro or I want to fight. It's gotten to a point where I get calls from managers and promoters. And promoters always call me, hey, I have a fighter. I want you to check him out. I work with all these promoters out there, Top Rank, Golden Boy, PBC, I mean, Heyman. And whenever they want to work with a fighter, they're trying to look for a coach and they choose me to do it. They'll send them to me. I'll watch them and I'll see some of the things I see in a fighter's character and discipline. You know, character and discipline, they're very accessible to work. You know, I know there's fighters that you can change. There's fighters that need a little bit of polishing, but the work is not a problem. The discipline, the character, it's the most important. Because when you have a fighter that thinks he knows it all, right there and then, it's like, hey, you know what? You got to find somewhere else. This is not the problem. I've had fighters that come here and they think they're already champions when they're not even contenders, you know? And it's not going to work. It's a problem. I mean, you got to be humble. You got to be humble. You got to listen. And the first thing I tell them is this, I'm the boss here. I'm the boss here. You're not the boss. Why? Because you want me to train you? If you want me to train you, you got to listen to me. If not, don't waste my time. Because if I tell you, hey, you need to do this, and you start talking back to me, like, then you already know, then why don't you do it? You know what I mean? I'm trying to correct you. And there's a lot of fighters like that. There's a lot of fighters that have that mentality where they think they know it, you know, and then they want to do whatever they want, and it doesn't work. When they come to me, they're looking for me. They're looking for my help. They're looking for my knowledge. They're looking for my guidance. So don't come to me. And when you're with me, you think you know it all, because it's not going to work. I didn't look for you. You know, I didn't tell you to come to me. You know, that's just the way it works. It's either you're going to understand that I'm the boss, or just don't waste my time. Go find somebody else. Because there's a lot of trainers. There's a lot of trainers that, and I've seen it, they're there to just be part of an event. They're there to go to travel. They're there to be in the environment, the boxing, the boxing environment, right? So they'll grab a fighter, and even though they're just making $100 or $200, but they're excited to be there. They're excited to go to Vegas. Oh, you're going to be in Vegas, even though you're an opponent. They're happy. They're happy to take a fighter to get beat up. But for them, it's, I mean, I'm going to be part of it. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be at the weigh-ins with this guy and that guy. And they don't care. So they'll do whatever the fighter says just to be part of that event. And with me, it's not like that. I mean, I've been in many, many events. You know, thank God, and I'm grateful that I've been at the top of the game. You know, Manny Pacquiao, Bradley, a couple of times, my brothers. You know, I've been some of the biggest events in boxing, and I'm grateful and I'm thankful that I've been there. So I'm not into, honestly. If a fighter comes to me and it's not going to work, you know, just find yourself somebody else that is going to hold a permit, because I'm not about holding a permit. I'm about improving you. I'm about making you better. You know, anybody can hold a permit and you can punch them, but not anybody can guide you and teach you properly how to stand, how to move, how to rotate. You know, I mean, there's a lot to boxing. It's not just holding a permit and saying I'm a coach.
That's right. Hey, it's hard not to notice, but you've landed quite a few fighters from Uzbekistan, right? How did that come about? Because it seemed like they flocked to you.
No. It's not that they just randomly came to me. Mm-hmm. There's a story. There's a story behind it. And there's a story behind it, and it's a great story. And I'm going to tell you, I know that my kids, At one day, God willing, they give me grandkids. I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna tell them how it's happened, because those are the stories that you tell your grandkids. Those are the stories you tell your kids. You know, even though they know it, but eventually grandkids will come around and say, "Hey, Grandpa, how do you train this? Or how did you get a hold of this guy?" You know, like in my stable, you know, I got my Israel Madrimov, Admadaliev, who is a two-time world champion, Raja Butayev, who just beat Jemma James, Bek Melakusiev, you know, Shakram Gyasov, you know, and then this gold medal guy that just won the gold medal of the Olympics, you know, Bahadir Jalolo, and many more, you know. How did this came about? You remember when Bradley fought Ruslan Provodnikov?
Yes, of course.
After that fight, I go to Ruslan Provodnikov and I said, "Hey, champ, great fight. You know, hey, nothing to be ashamed of." I told him, I've been a big fan of you. I told Ruslan, I've been a big fan of you. As a matter of fact, when you fought Mauricio Herrera, I watched the fight. I said, at one point, you were offered, your name was offered to fight my brother Julio. And we turned it down. We turned that fight down because we know you. So I told his manager, who's Vadim Kornilov, great person, great manager. I mean, one of the nicest and most humble person I've ever met in my life. I told him, because he was a translator. I said, "Hey, Vadim, tell him that, you know, I follow him and I'm a big fan of him. And I've always followed him. I like him." And he goes, "Oh," he told him, and he goes, "Thank you." So from that moment on, we became friends. And every time we went to a boxing event, I would run into Vadim. "Hey, how's the champ? How's Ruslan?" And everything happened after that Bradley Provodnikov fight. So 3-4 events came around. I ran into Vadim. "Hey, Vadim, how's Ruslan?" "Great." Tell him I say hello. "Hey, thank you." So that relationship was formed at that moment, to the point where Ruslan Provodnikov was training at the wild card, and at the same time he was training with Manny Pacquiao. And I'll never forget, we went to Arizona, my wife and the kids, and we're driving back from Arizona. We went to the river, to the lake, and I get a call from Vadim, and Vadim called me. He says, "Hey," I mean, what a surprise. He says, "Hey, Joel, I want to ask you." "Sure, I want to ask you for a favor." He says, right now they're mentioning a fight between Pacquiao and Ruslan Provodnikov. Really? He says, yeah. And I think it's going to happen. He says, but we cannot train under the same gym. I mean, Pacquiao and Provodnikov train in the same gym with, at the wild card. He says, so we got to find a trainer. And he told me, you know what? And from all the trainers that I've known, and I see you, I like you. He says, I like you. I respect you. I respect your work. And I would like to see if you will be interested in training Ruslan. I said, well, first of all, thank you for considering me. Of course, I'll train him. And he tells me, at that time, I had the Magdaleno brothers, Jesse Magdaleno, Diego Magdaleno. I had a bunch of fighters at the time. And he told me, would you consider coming to Big Bear? I said, no, I can't. I'm sorry. I says, I'm not used to that. I train fighters in my gym, my stable. I'm not the coach that goes out to other gyms. And he goes, would you consider coming to Los Angeles? I said, no. And I told him, look, buddy, thank you for considering me, you know, part of your stable, but I can't. I'm sorry. Look, let me tell you why. I have 8 fighters right now in my stable. And by me leaving the gym to train Ruslan, I mean, I'll look back and these guys are going to say, hey, well, he left us because of this guy. You know, we've been here longer. You got to understand that. I have 8 fighters training right now, and they all have a date. He says, bring them all with you. He says, we'll get a place for them. I said, no, I can't, because I'm going back to the same thing. If I tell the boys, hey, guys, I mean, I have fighters from Mexico. I had a fighter from Cancun, a fighter from Chihuahua, fighters from Vegas. I had a fighter from Texas, Omar Figueroa. I said, look, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way, buddy. If I tell these guys, hey, guys, let's go train in Big Bear, all you guys. And when we get over there, they're going to see that I'm there for Ruslan. They're going to say, oh, so he moved his camp for this guy? It's not fair. He goes, you're right. He goes, let me talk to Ruslan because he has his masseuse, nutritionist, so his strength and conditioning coach. I said, well, let me know. 2 days later, he called back. He goes, Ruslan says it's okay. He'll go to India. The first day Ruslan Provodnikov came down to India, he was in a bad mood. You know, he wasn't really happy. He came to the desert, nothing around, you know, ugly. I mean, it's not ugly, but it's just like, it's different. And the following day, he comes to the gym happy, singing, playing music. And he tells Vadim, he says, I love this place. He goes, right here, we drive only 5 minutes from home to the gym. Over there in Wild Card, we are like 3 miles from Wild Card and we drive 45 minutes to the gym. Traffic is bad. So Ruslan Provodnikov loved the desert. In summertime, he loved it. So that's how the relationship started. When Ruslan Provodnikov retired, and then Vadim and his promotional company, they decided to form a team of fighters. So they were looking into some Uzbekistan fighters that were gold medalists, silver medalists. They were looking into top elite fighters, the best on that town, on that side of town, in Uzbekistan and Russia. So they brought 2 fighters. They brought 2 to the U.S. I think they came to New York. They stopped in New York. They trained over there for a bit. They stopped in Miami. They trained over there. And they ended up in L.A. at the, in L.A.? The Rock? No.
Maywood? Yeah. No.
No, The Rock. Mm. I think it was where Manny Robles was before.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name of it, though.
Yeah. So it was the time when I was training at the time. I was training Lucas Matisse. I was training Lucas Matisse for that Thailand guy, the Thailand guy that he fought in L.A. And then I was in L.A., so they called me, hey, Joel, you know what? We got some fighters. You know, we would like for you to check them out. I said, okay, I'm not doing nothing right now. You know, Lucas Matisse is resting. So I drive to the gym, and I met with Shakram Diasov and Batir Akhmedov. Batir was the guy that fought Mario Barrios. They beat Mario Barrios and they gave Mario Barrios a fight. Yeah. So I trained them, you know, for a few rounds, boom, right there at the gym. And they loved it. And the boys told them, hey, I like this guy. So right away he told me, hey, Joel, these guys like you. They said they want to train with you. They came to India. When I was at the Boys and Girls Club, they were renting a motel down the street so they can walk from the gym to the motel. They were there in the motel for months.
Wow.
I mean, and they were just left there. So we don't speak the language. They're there. But these guys will go out there and explore. They will get on the bus and they will go to Palm Springs on the bus and they'll come back. They will get a haircut and stuff. They don't know English at all. And then all of a sudden they brought, it was just Shakram and Akhmedov. And then later on they brought Akhmadaliev and Butayev, which was four. And all of a sudden they loved it. From there, they started renting a house. They rent a house at a country club. But it gets a little expensive here because here in the desert, there's high season, there's low season. Right now it's high season. Once Coachella Fest is over, everything goes down. Summertime is bad. So there was times in which they would pay like $6,000 a month, you know, for rent. So they decided to buy a house. They decided to buy a house and they bought a beautiful home in a nice community. They fixed it up and now they live here. But now, like I said, I have Raja Butayev, Akhmadaliev, Bektamir, Diasov, Madrimov. There's Batir, Akhmedov, you know, Lukovic. I mean, you name it. I have a bunch of them. They love it here. And now, since I opened this gym, they come in and it's their house, man. You know, I went to Uzbekistan twice last year. And people over there, I mean, the hospitality is great, man. They treat us. They love us. I mean, if I'm walking down the street, you see a taxi cab pull over on the middle of the street and tell me, please, photo. Yeah, okay, no problem. Man, I go to a restaurant away from everybody where I think nobody knows me. And I'll eat at a restaurant and when I ask for the check, they don't charge me. I mean, the president himself wanted to meet me. No, man, it's great. I mean, honestly, I said it last time I went to Uzbekistan. In Uzbekistan, they treat me better than they treat me in my own country.
Wow, that is an incredible story, man. All right, so moving along, because in this show, you know, I like to highlight some of the young prospects. I know you're always working with some young guys. Who are some of the young prospects that you got that you're working with right now?
Right now, I have Bektamir Melakusiev. I have Raja Butayev, who's a world champion, who just beat Jamal James. We have MJ Akhmadaliev, Morjan, who beat Danny Roman, who has a good fight coming up. Hopefully, I don't know if it's Ronnie Rios or whoever it is. I have Israel Madrimov, who recently beat Soro. More likely, I don't know. We might go into a rematch or not. I don't know. And other than that, I have some local fighters. I have Manny Flores, who's undefeated 10-0. I have Jose Tito Sanchez, who's another undefeated fighter. The kid is really, really tough. Mexican kid who to me promises to be a world champion, as well as Manny Flores. And I have a couple of young amateurs who will turn pro next year. Right now, number one, number two in the nations. I have Caden Griffiths, a kid who is making a lot of noise in the amateurs, top amateur fighter that we have in our gym. Started training since he was little. Right now, he's 14, 15 years old. And Grant Flores, who is 147-pounder, tall kid. He's only 17 years old, sparring Brandon Lee, Raja Butayev, Batir, a tough kid who, to me, will be a world champion in the future. I mean, we have a lot of talent. You know, we really dedicate time to our fighters. We like to teach, not only train, we like to teach. We like to correct. We like to improve their ability. And most important is strengthen their mind, you know, you strengthen their mind to become physically and mentally strong, and the discipline as well. You know, discipline is everything. So I have a good team. I have a good a bunch of good elements, and they're all top rated fighters. So, you know, I'm thinking with next year or so, I'm gonna have a few more world champions.
Gotcha. Now, you are always busy. So, what fights do you have in March? You have a bunch of fights in March.
I don't know. In March, I honestly, right now, I have scheduled Bektimir Malakusiev. Last Friday, I was in Mexico. I'm training Angelito Acosta from Puerto Rico and his wife, Areli Musiño, who she just recently won on Saturday. She won on the Munguia undercard. She stopped the other girl in the second round. She put up a great performance. It was our second fight together. Her father passed away in July of last year due to COVID. I think it was COVID. And so Areli and Tito Acosta were left, you know, without a coach, which was his father-in-law, and her father was their coach. So Miguel Cotto Promotions reached out to me that if I would train them, and I said, great, you know, I opened my doors to them, and good people, great, humble kids. And, you know, they're here, which is, that's another two elements in my team. So, but other than that, in March right now, as far as I know, I only have Bektimir Malakusiev fighting and another kid fighting on the Virgil Ortiz undercard. Miguel Gaona was 1-0. But in April, if I'm not mistaken, I think I have another. I have Raja Butayev more likely fighting Stanyones on the Spence Ugas card, you know. But that's basically what I see in the horizon.
Now let me ask you something. I don't know if you are or were at one time. Were you working with Dmitry Bivol?
You know, Dmitry Bivol, I cannot tell you we were working with him. He came and trained at our gym. He trained in our gym. And more likely, if Canelo decides to go that route, he will be here training with us next month. He will be here with us training next month. And the reason being is it's the same promotion, the same managers that manage my whole team. They want people to come and train in California with me. I mean, with his team, so that we can help a little bit, you know, because Canelo, they want us to give him some tips on the inside work. You know, he's more of an outside fighter. So whatever we can do to help, we're going to be there to help people. You know, he's a great, humble kid, hardworking kid, strong, and whatever it takes, you know, it's our job. And we welcome people and all his team to our house. And, you know, especially for an important fight like that. And even if it wasn't an important fight, you know, they're always more than welcome to come into our house, and, you know, our house is their house.
Gotcha. All right. Now I'm going to ask you some quick hits on three fights that are coming up, and I just want to get your thoughts on it. First, Shakur Stevenson versus Oscar Valdez.
Shakur Stevens and Oscar Valdez. It's going to be a good fight. You know, you got a Mexican fighter against a kid. You know, we go back to like Marquez and Mayweather, you know. That answers my question right there.
Okay. All right. Now, Dillian White just signed his contract, so he is fighting Tyson
Fiend. You know, I like Oscar Valdez. I like Oscar Valdez. Yeah. He's a great warrior. He's a great Mexican warrior. But styles make fights, you know? Styles make fights. The Brazilian kid he fought in Tucson gave him a run for his money, you know? And I know the Shakur is a smarter fighter than that. You know, so I know I love Oscar. Oscar is a great, great person. He's a good friend. But like I said, you know, being real and being honest, the only way that Oscar will beat Shakur is by knocking him out. I just see it that way. If Oscar don't knock out Shakur, he will not win. Because Shakur is smart, slick. He's uncomfortable because he's slick. And like I said, you know, fighter styles, sometimes they meet and they comply with each other. But I just think that Shakur Stevens is fast on his feet. He's smart, and he's in and out fighter. And he can stand in there and exchange, but I think his style is going to be a complicated style for Oscar. You know, I don't take anything from Oscar. Oscar's proven himself. You know, he knocked out Berchett, one of the great Mexican warriors of this moment. But I just think Shakur is, it's his style is just completely uncomfortable for Oscar. And if Oscar don't knock him out, he will not win. I think Shakur will outpoint him.
Gotcha. And then Tyson Fury versus Dillian White?
Tyson Fury and White. I think Tyson's confidence is higher now, you know, after those performances. Honestly, it's been years. It's been years since the Holyfield era, Mike Tyson era, that I have not seen a heavyweight fight like their last fight. Honestly, man. I mean, I hardly watch boxing. I mean, because I see boxing all day long. But when I sit down to watch a fight, I want to enjoy it. And if I get off my seat and I'm happy and I'm excited and my adrenaline is pumping, it's because I enjoyed a great fight. And that night, Wilder and Fury, the last one, man, it was great. I mean, yeah, I mean, those guys deserve an award, man, for fight of the year. And I just think that right now, Fury's confidence is really high. And I think he'll be White, no problem.
Now, the third fight, the Ugas versus Spence.
Ugas Spence, you know, Ugas has climbed the ladder. But I think Ugas' age is a big factor. I mean, I faced Ugas before with Tomas Delorme. And honestly, I thought we won that fight. Ugas has been in the ups and downs, you know? I mean, just because he beat Manny Pacquiao doesn't mean he's going to beat Errol Spence. Errol Spence is a physically strong fighter, younger, and a style's different. I think as much as Ugas tries to do, I think Spence will beat him. He won't knock him out, but he'll beat him. But at the same time, Ugas has been down. Ugas has been down many times. I mean, Tomas Delorme dropped him. And I know that he doesn't have the greatest chin. That if Spence catches him with a good shot, it could hurt him too. But, I mean, like I said, you know, you can't predict a fight like that. I mean, Spence could knock out Mikey Garcia, who is a 135-pounder. You know, he's a natural 147-pounder. But anything can happen. Anything can happen in boxing. But I just think that this fight is made for Spence, honestly. This fight is made for Spence. After Ugas beat Manny Pacquiao, who's the next who's the superstar right now in that division? I mean, going back to the Bradley situation. Ugas is not a ticket seller. He's not a fan-friendly fighter that would sell out an event saying, Ugas, your Dennis Ugas is fighting. In other words, your Dennis Ugas needs a good partner to dance to sell tickets. Because let's say, for example, if Ugas decides, oh, you know what? I don't want to fight Spence. I want to fight, let's say, another fighter that is not ranked, just an average Joe. Who's going to buy tickets? You know what I mean? Yeah. He needs a good partner to dance a good song.
Yeah. All right. Now, lastly, what do you want to say from you being a veteran coach? What do you want to tell the young fighters of today that are trying to make it into the sport of boxing as a professional? What advice would you give those young fighters?
The only advice I give the fighters is this. I've seen it. And recently, I've seen it a lot. Stay focused. Give yourself a goal. If you're going to do this, do it 100%. Don't do it because you want to try. Give yourself 100%. I've seen it in the past, and I see it now. There's fighters that start boxing, they turn pro, and they start winning. And once they start winning, they think they're already champions when they're not even halfway there. And they start slacking. They think things are easy. They think, oh, I got this. Just because you're put on the right path to win some fights. Remember, when you start your career and you're a fighter that it's an investment for a promoter. They're giving you fighters to win. Train for that. Okay? I mean, they're not giving you hard fights. They're giving you fights for you to win. Every fighter early in their careers, they're giving you fights to move up, to improve your record, to make your record look good. Down the road, they're going to put you against somebody that is going to be a test. You pass the test, you're going to keep moving. So a lot of fighters, just because they're winning, all of a sudden they think they're already champions, and then they start slacking their discipline. They got poor discipline. They start, you know, procrastinating. And that's when things go down. You got to be hungry from the beginning until the end. You got to be hungry from the day you start until the day you finish. If you lose that hunger, you're not going to make it. That's why I always tell my fighters, if you're going to do this, give yourself some time. Say, okay, I'm going to turn pro at 20. And by the age of 30, I'm done. But between the age of 20 and 30, give yourself 100%. You know, don't give yourself 30, 40% because it's not going to work. 100%. Nowadays, it's not like before. Boxing became, obviously, it's a business, but at the same time, now social media and all that, it elevates fighters. It is. But it's a big distraction. Keep yourself on your lane. Keep yourself in the gym. And give yourself the time that you're going to last in the sport. But give yourself 100% in that period of time.
Oh, man, that's some really great advice from a veteran, established, accomplished trainer. Joel, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And I'll definitely be keeping in touch with you, and we'll do this again sometime soon.
Thank you, baby. Have a good night.
All right, you
enjoy your evening, man, and I will see you soon, huh?
All right, man. Okay, bye. All right, welcome back. So we're going to get into some news and notes and talk about some of the fights coming up. Right now, we have on the news side, Dillian White has finally decided to sign the contract to fight against Tyson Fury. I didn't see why this was like such a big deal as far as news is concerned, but apparently he was waiting to the very last minute to actually sign the contract after the deal was pretty much done. I don't understand what his holdout was, but whatever. Dillian White better be glad that he's even getting this opportunity, because he's gotten knocked the hell out in recent years, and you know, because of the lack of competition heavyweight division, he's getting this shot. Honestly, I don't think he deserves it, but that's just my opinion. So it looks like we are going to have it. Dillian White, Tyson Fury, as far as details on when that fight's going to happen. You know, they're saying end of April, something like that. So we'll see. We'll just kind of, you know, kind of keep an eye on it and see what happens. So this past weekend, Terrence Crawford was in the corner of Amir Khan. He was, you know, of course, interviewed, asked some of the same questions as he always is. But one of the things that stood out this time, and something that I have mentioned, you know, a ton of times in the past, like year and a half, is that if he doesn't get the fight that he's looking for at 147, that he has some intent on going up to 154. Now, I've said that for a while now, because being that he's a WBO champion, if he decides to move up, then he would be next in line for the WBO title at 154. Jermell Charlo, Brian Castaño, they still have their fight going on. If that fight happens, the winner of that can potentially be told to fight Terrence Crawford, and Terrence Crawford would have an opportunity at Undisputed once again at 154, something that, you know, he hasn't been able to attempt to accomplish at 147. So be on the lookout for that. There was a Canelo Alvarez post on Instagram where I'm going to read it here. It's someone posted a meme of sorts, and they started every sentence with, if he fought this person, then he ducked this person. And the list is like 15 sentences long. Then at the end, the person puts, my brain is fried. Canelo reposted it and put, love this, with the crying emoji. And that just kind of describes his current situation, how some of the folks on boxing, in the boxing world, are taking it. You know, Twitter is going crazy and somebody's ducking who and this, that. It's just ridiculous. Canelo Alvarez is the kingpin of the sport. He could do what he wants. Whoever he fights is going to be an event. People are going to go. End of story. So that was Canelo joking around. He's something else. This past weekend, over in the UK, Amir Khan and Kell Brook finally fought. Right, this was a fight that should have happened about 5-6 years ago, but it didn't. And although there wasn't that much buzz here about it, everybody was buzzing about it in the UK. Then some folks started to buzz about it on fight day. I wasn't really too excited about it. You know, it was cool. I mean, these guys are, you know, both in so much simple words, damaged goods, right? And so Amir Khan, Kell Brook happened. Amir Khan just didn't seem like he had any type of punch resistance. First round, he was already staggered. It was just bad news. Leading up to it, it just seemed like Kell Brook was so, like, he wanted this fight so bad, like he could taste it. And for Amir Khan, he was into it, but it was like it was business as usual. But Kell Brook really, really wanted this fight. He really wanted this one. And he was going to do everything he could to make it happen. So Kell Brook, bigger, stronger, handled his business. In the sixth round, he was just beaten on Amir Khan, and they ended up stopping the fight. So Kell Brook finally gets the victory that he was looking for. Amir Khan talked about potentially retiring. Both of them should retire. But Kell Brook was talking about potentially facing Chris Eubank Jr. I don't want to see that. I think this was an opportunity for Kell Brook to ride off in the sunset on, you know, with a victory, with a sweet victory, that is. I think both of them should hang it up. You know, there's no shame in that. You know, if they go any further, this is how fighters get hurt, you know, and potentially long term. So both of them guys, hey, salute to them. They had great careers, but they should hang it up. Over at Tijuana, Jaime Munguia fought Demetrius Ballard. And, you know, it was an interesting venue because it was a bull ring down in Mexico. And, you know, they had a nice crowd. I know some guys that went down there. They had a great time. Jaime Munguia ended up knocking out Demetrius Ballard. The one thing that I saw with Munguia is that he was hurting after the weigh-in. They were fanning him. He was laying down. Those all types of stuff. And when he came on fight night, he seemed really soft in the midsection. And his face was definitely fleshy. And it just seemed like he had trouble making 160. And, you know, he's a big guy. He's a big guy. I don't know. I don't know if he can continue to fight at 160 or if he's got to just change some stuff up, because he's naturally a big guy. I know a guy that sparred with him, you know, a couple years back. And this was when he was competing at 154. When he was sparring him, he was like almost 190. So you're talking about what, like 45 pounds, you know, that Munguia is potentially dropping me in between fights to make 154, 160. I don't know if he still balloons that much, but it just kind of seems like he's not staying as disciplined as he should between fights. So I don't know. Something to look at. I don't think that he may not stay at 160 too long. He may have to go up to 168 if he can't make the weight no more. So something to keep an eye on. This weekend, there are fights. Let's see. Over in Glasgow, Scotland, Josh Taylor, undisputed 140-pound champ. He's going to be defending against Jack Catterall, and that should be a really good fight. Let me see if there's anything else on that card. Nope. And Chris Colbert will be fighting on Showtime against Hector Luis Garcia. It's going to be a good fight. Gary Antoine Russell versus Victor Postol. Very, very good fight. Definitely want to see what Gary Russell has against a crafty veteran like that. He's one to watch, Gary Antoine Russell. He is one of the younger brothers of Gary Russell Jr. And then Jerwin and Cajas, he's going to be fighting Fernando Martinez. So there's some good fights there on Showtime on February 26th. To note, I guess, Guillermo Rigondeaux is fighting in the Middle East somewhere. Yeah. Quickly scrolling through that. And I think that's it. Looking forward to next week. Next week, they got some really, really good fights on Friday and Saturday. So, and we'll talk about that some more. But that's it for this show. For the Boxing Rush Hour show, I'm your host, Abraham Gonzalez. Peace.
The Boxing Rush Hour show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. It's the Boxing Rush Hour show.